First thing we need to define is what was the purpose of Maisik Sofel. Now, there are three shitas, we'll come back to that. Whether there are those that hold it's deraisa, those that holds it's derabbanan, which we'll seem to find support for, and those that hold it it's mitam minuk. But the question in all of them is what was its tachlis, what was its purpose? And in general, this is really the confusion starts from right here. You know, we all, you know, tzedakah is a very noble thing. You know, and the iconic poor man who doesn't have his breakfast to eat is very appealing. But the question is that the purpose of Maisa? A different question. How do we have to take care of a poor person? Was that the tachlis of Maisa? So let's look at the Ramban. The Ramban is in the Parsha of Aser to Aser. And Umedrish Chachomim, and it's a Chazal. The Loshon Aser to Aser, concerning the Loshon of Aser to Aser. So the first part, the first three words made it to Jewish history, to posterity. Aser, b'shvil shetis asher. Give Maisa, so you should get a brocha. If you give Maisa, you get a brocha from the Rabbi Nishabar. The Chayvah Salavavus explains this in a very simple fashion. If you work in the corporate world, and they make you a controller, so you're a rookie, so you're way down the totem pole, you have certain responsibilities, you execute your responsibilities well, you show that you understand, you respect the money of the corporation, you look after it well, so you're industrious, intelligent, so they move you up to a higher position, give you a little more authority. A little more authority, not a good day, they give you a raise too. You work another 2-3 years, and you're really outstanding in your job, so they move you up again. So each time that you move up, you have more responsibilities, but you also have a larger salary. So the Chavos HaLevavos says the Rabbeinu Shalom is no different. When he gives us money, we have to understand that that's where the issue of tzedakah begins. Our problem is that we begin tzedakah when the need is present and I have to reach into my pocket to take out the money. But Chavos HaLevavos says we have it wrong. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam gave us part for ourselves and part for our need from the outset. That's what it was given for. Those are the lines in the budget that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam allocated to us. So in effect, we're not giving away my money. It's true, I have the right to give it away. But the Rabbeinu Shalom gave it to me for what purpose? To give away. So that's Aleph. So the Chavos HaLevavos says, so the Rabbeinu Shalom gives me a small amount of money, and I'm a good controller. I do what he wants me to do admirably, so he moves me up. Gives me some more money. So we'll have more money to give away, but my chelik also gets bigger. And that's his notion of aser b'shvil shetis asher, to the extent that we hear the call of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam and realize that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam gives us a certain part of our money never intended for ourselves in the first place, but only intended for others. If we understand that and act upon it, so the Rabbeinu Shel Olam keeps increasing our level of responsibility and the bracha that comes with it to ourselves. So this part of the Chazal made it to Jewish posterity. Asher, aser b'shvil shetis asher. This everyone knows. The second part is already not so well known. And the third part, nobody knows. The second part is aser shalot tis chaser. It goes in the other direction too. A person that doesn't conduct his responsibilities properly gets demoted. You know, it's models by, okay, yes. We don't put him up, we don't put him down. A guy that's outstanding, we put up. But if a guy is a disaster on the job, he doesn't take his fiduciary responsibility seriously, so they demote him. So the Rebbe Nachman was no different. You know, if you show that you don't know how to take care of the amount that I gave you, so I'm going to give you less to be in charge of. You know, I don't trust you. Is aser b'shvil shelo tischaser. It goes both ways. It brings the greatest bracha. And lo aleinu, if we ignore the call of the Rebbe Nachman, it can impact us negatively. So this sumdo, the second part. The third part that the Ramban quotes from this medrash is basically totally unknown. But it's a mefurash in the Ramban, and the Ramban quotes it as a medrash. Remez le mefurash hayamim. Right? So we had, in Klal Yisrael, most of the people were engaged in agriculture. Zvulun was a trader. Right? International business. So he didn't earn his keep from agriculture. He was a businessman. So, Remez le Meforshe Yamim, so this is an allusion to the Meforshe Yamim, to business types, not involved in agriculture. Lotzi Echod Me'asar, to give one-tenth of their income. So Chazal tell us that we should assume, I guess, that this is in the Pashto, it's not a Deraisa Dikadin. I don't know any Mokka, but this would be a Deraisa Dikadin. But it's apparently from the Ramban, we believe it's a Din Rabbanon, that the person that doesn't earn... If a person earns his keep in agriculture, so we have various, he has trumas, he has maestros, he has things that he has to give, he has to be machzik, koyanim, de levium, right, the 24 matnas kahuna. But if someone that's in business is exempt from all of that, so he doesn't have, there's no trumas and maestros. So Chazal instituted, remez lemeforshe yam lehutzi echad mes, they should also tithe, they should also give 10%. Even though with the rice there is no such din. But obviously in the Hashkofa Shabo, it's no different. The Rebbe Nachman says that I give brocha, part of my largess is to assist the ones that are in need. So this is true for business types too, for people that earn non-agricultural income. Good. And the last two words remained in the Ramban and in the Medrash. Because here the Ramban defines one was the tachlis of Maisa, La mele Torah, to those that toil in Torah. You know, we have Shevet Levi, we have Shvatim there, or historically, when the Kaiser was Alad Mosim, that had the responsibility of articulating Torah as a Shevet. Right? That was one function of the Levium. There was a function of Shevet Yisachar. Now, if we're not going to take care of them, then how will they exist? How will the Torah thrive? And we understood this historically, that we have to take care of our melee Torah. And that's the Tazer state in Ramban. That was the purpose of Maisa. Maisa Ksofim was made for Amelei Torah. That's its prime function. Yeah, all its stalkers are important. But ultimately, the root of Klal Yisrael is our Torah. You know, not everyone is in the position, you know, to spend his days learning. Most of us have other responsibilities. There are real responsibilities that are according to the Torah. We are safta degon echon, we should be involved in business and commercial affairs and take care of our families. That's the responsibility of most of us. That's what the Gemara says in Brochus. But we have to see to it that the Rabbanu Shalom's Torah thrives too. Because that's our key. That, without that, what do we have? And it's a notion that the world around us is understood, but we have not had we've had more to rely on individual initiative than the power of the state with it. Across all of history, Lahavdil, in the non-Jewish world, who supported the arts? All the great artists, how did they eat? The Michelangelos and the Da Vinci, all these chevra, how did they eat? The princes of their eras saw great talent and they supported them. Because they understood that there's something larger than being dedicated to just eating. You know, they have a whole malucha, a whole country of people dedicated to seeing that we eat. And whose lives are dead fine. But they also realized there's something beyond that that could be accomplished. So the Havdal, they supported the arts across all the centuries. And what it's true today, go to a major musical, go to Carnegie Hall, and see how many corporate sponsorships there are of everything that's going on there. It doesn't exist from the fees that the people that come to watch their performances pay. We'll be long out of business. It's in business because corporate America has a sensitivity, for whatever the reasons, to support such activity. So Lahavdil, we also have such a responsibility. We have not historically been able to do it with the mechanisms of state, and political power, the patrons, the art patrons, the princes of Europe were political power brokers. They were very powerful people. And because of that, they were very wealthy. You know, we haven't had the mechanisms of state. We've had to rely on individual largesse because of the lengthy gullus that we're in. But the Rabbeinu Shel Olam Meikara established the notion of Maisek Sofen, that we should take care of the Amelei Torah. That's the principal reason. All its stock is very important and very nice. And we have to see to that too. But Maisek Sofen was made for a principal purpose. I say the only, but the Shach says not the only purpose. The principal purpose is Hachzokas HaTorah, to strengthen Torah in our communities across the generations. So this is step one, to understand that which we're out to do. Yeah. We also need to understand the schus that's involved. Chazal tell us that takeif l'talmud chacham brocha. If we assist talmidei chachamim, then we receive brocha from the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. There's a very famous incident. It's a very striking incident. It struck me very deeply. I heard it from an Adam Godel, Chaim Epstein, Zechat Tzadik Livracha. Rabbi Yitzchok Elchanan was the Rav of Kovno, and he was the greatest Pesach in Europe in the latter part of the 19th century. He was number one. He was the Godel Adar. The Rabbi Yitzchok Elchanan had a brother who lived in Eretz Yisrael. And he used to support his brother. You know, to live in Eretz Yisrael in the 19th century, was, if I would describe it as abject poverty, that would be about 100 times richer than it was. And someone came to him, to Rav Yitzchok Elchanan, and they said, Rebbe, we don't understand. I'm in business. I don't have a whole day to, I don't learn most of the day. Well, I try, I eat them a little in the morning, a little at night, but I'm in business. So I give a lot of money to be machzik Torah, want the schus of Torah. But you have the schus of learning most of the day. So what's your big urge to, you know, be involved in being machzik your brother? So Rabbi Yitzchok Elchanan answered him in this fashion. Rabbi Yitzchok Elchanan had a very storied life. In his youth, he lived in poverty. And later, he rose to fame, and he became the Rav of one of the greatest cities in Europe, Kovno, the capital of Lithuania. When he was in the Rav of Kovno, there were no financial issues in his life. If Kovno was a big city, you know, had wealthy people about them, and the Rav was well taken care of. So he said the following. He said, in my youth, I was merited to learn Torah Yedeyat Chak. Torah was difficult. He says, now that I became Rav of Kovno, that's behind me. The Balabatim and Kovno see that I'm well taken care of. I don't want for anything. So where will I have the schus of Torah Yedeyat Chak? That schus, which I used to have and I don't have anymore since I became one. He says, my brother in Eretz Yisrael, he says, he learns Yedeyat Chak. So I want to be mishtatef in his learning. So this is the Aleph. The Aleph is we have to clarify, and it's not to negate. We have to. It's not to negate that which we feel until now. It's we have to expand our horizons. Klal Yisrael has a tremendous feeling for to help people in need. It's deeply, deeply ingrained in Klal Yisrael. If someone's in need, they have a real need, a legitimate need, that is deeply ingrained in us to help them. And that's a beautiful thing. But we have to realize, above and beyond that, as important as that is, and I don't denigrate it in the least, is to be machzik Torah. The Torah should flourish. So that is step number one. Now, I mentioned that there are three shittas in what the chiyuv of the din of ma'aser. I didn't say the chiyuv. I have to use my words very carefully. The din of ma'aser k'sofim is. There are those that say it's a deraisa dikadin. There are those, and I believe the Rambam would be amongst them, that would say it's a din derabbanan. And those that say it's mitam minuk. Now, we would think, and that's where we have to, it's very easy to go astray, that if it's mitzad minuk, it's less chomer than it is if it's a din derabbanan. But we can easily get, if we adapt it as mitzad minuk, then it becomes a chiyuv of a neder. And what happens if it's a chiyuv of a neder, then in all the shilas which exist around ma'isik sofim, we have to be machma, because it becomes a sofik deraisa. So Zalman Orbach said we have to be careful that we should establish at the beginning that we're not accepting it upon ourselves with the koyach of a neder. I'll do it. It's important to do it. Not doing it mikoyach neder. For example, I'll give one simple example where this is immediately relevant. Somebody comes to me now and he needs money. It's legitimate. I want to help him out. Now, the problem is that I don't have any Maisa money left. I spent all my Maisa money. I came to a gvir in South Africa once in Johannesburg many, many years ago. Mr. Benny Weinstein. I don't believe he's living anymore from what I know. And then he was a man in his 40 years ago. He was a man then somewhere between 55 or so, you know. I believe that he's passed. So he owned the largest rice importing company in South Africa. So he was an enormously wealthy man. So I went to see him in his office one day, and he tells me, Rabbi, my ethic is to give 18% of my income every year to tzedakah. That's my ethic. He says, but inevitably I go a nice piece past that. Why? Because at the beginning of each calendar year, I make a cheshbon of what are the number of people that I expected to come this year, and how much money I'm allocating for it. And according to the end, that's how I parcel out the money over the year. Well, he says, inevitably, by the time the middle of November comes, I miscalculate it. I used up the 18%, and there's still people coming for another 6 weeks or so of the year. So I don't send them away. So I take care of them too. And he took care of people nicely, very nicely. So inevitably, I go way past 18% a year.
Wow.
Now, Shaila is like this. I mean, it's fine. I'm a very, very nice man. A very nice man. Now, you know, if I would be, we would be as rich as he is. So, okay, so instead of 18%, it costs us 23% this year. Okay, mamelo. But for the rest of us, even whatever number we're going to give, we have a ceiling. How far we can. But a guy came to me now, and I don't have any Maisa money. All the Maisa money that came in, I gave out already. And now he wants, and I want to help this guy. So what do I want to do? So I always say like this, listen, in the next 2 months, I'm going to earn X amount of money, and I'll have X amount of Maisa, so I'll prepay him the Maisa now. I'll prepay the Maisa. So I won't wait until after I earn the money and then put it aside. I'll prepay on the Maisa. So I'll give him, I'll take another $5,000 out of my pocket, and I'll give it to him. So the truth is, in the strict sense of Maisa, one can't do such a thing. I could only Maisa, it's like something, you can't give Maisa payers before you have the payers. You can't give Maisa Ksofa before you have the money. But if I said that I'm not accepting it as a neder, just as an hoga toivo, then I'm allowed to prepay. That's one of the things of Shlomo Zalman. So it's important when a person starts that he makes sure that he's not bekabel with neder. Otherwise, he's going to wind up with every chumra in the book as a neder as a din d'oraisa. So that's so there. In the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah that whereas lengthy Rosh are those around approximately Dafhei and Rosh Hashanah about the Isra of Balta Acher. The Isra of Balta Acher affects very things. You know, it affects Karbonos, that if I have a responsibility to bring a Karbon, there's a Zman in which I have to bring. There's a Shail. It's one Yontif, it's two Yontif, it's three Yontif, it's three Yontif, Kisidron of Sukkos Pesach. It was varied Shitas Tanoim in the Gemara. But among the things the Gemara says that are subject to Balta Acher is Tztoka. Tztoka money is also subject to Balta Acher. So it has to be distributed in timely fashion. And it certainly means it's certainly within the year of the time that it was allocated. Except, the Rishonim say that if the reason that I don't allocate it is I don't have suitable causes to give it to yet, so then I'm allowed to hold it until I find a suitable course. So this is the din of, so there's a din of Balta Acher in Stokas too. Yeah.
Balta Acher generally has to do with, sorry, if I made a neder, I'm making a neder, how much I'm going to give, I'll just give it then.
Yeah, but there's two things, as there's an ode to Yehuda, and this is equally true in Maisik Sofim too. The ode to Yehuda claimed that he was mechadish something. He says, "Lo kidmani odom eilam." There's no mechaber, at least no mechaber in the history of Klal Yisrael that they'd articulated this yet. Except, I think the Maris Chayes, if I recall, found that the Ramban in the Sefer HaMitzvos also says it. I'll call upon him.
Is he after the Noda? It was quite a bit after the Noda Bihud, the Maris Chayes.
No, but he found it from the Ramban.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So what does the Ramban say? The Ramban says the following, that in all the Matnas Kahuna, the Matnas Aniyam, the Matonas, there are two mitzvahs. There's a mitzvah to be mafresh it, and there's a mitzvah to give it. Now, once I was mafresh truma, I was mafresh meiser, I could eat to my heart's delight. But there's still a chiyuv, there's a mitzvah to give the trumas and the meisers. It's not only, well, what else am I going to do with it? No, there's a mitzvah to give it. Stalkers also have the same thing. There's a mitzvah to set it aside, but that's not enough. There's a mitzvah to give it. You have to make sure it shows up where it's supposed to do its job. Now, if this is in a Balta Acher, so that articulates something else. In the halachas of Balta Acher and Karbonos, this is man. So the very cheat is what this man is, when the asay is, when the lois asay is. But let's say, assuming that pashtus, that it means that I have one year of chagim to do it, and after that I'm over Balta Acher. But it has to be a defined period. If there would be no defined period, then they can't have Balta Acher. I mean, a guy wouldn't be over Balta Acher when he died. You know, if he died, he left over money in his bank account that it didn't give the stock, it would be over Balta Acher. But in this world, it wouldn't be a Yisro Balta Acher.
You got a fiscal year.
Oh. So that means, you're right. So just as in Trumas and Maestros, there's a year, right? So that year goes, most of the year, certain things from Rosh Hashanah, certain things from Tu B'Shvat, right? There's a defined year. In Maisik Sofon, it also has to be a defined year. But there's no inherently defined year. So the person could define the year on his own. So in other words, I could say, listen, January to January works for me. A lot of people might feel that May to May works for them. In other words, depending if you do your taxes in April, so then maybe May 1st is a good time, because then you have the clearest picture of your financial state of the past year. If you're one of the October tax people, so maybe November 1st is the time to end your fiscal year. So you need a fiscal year first in terms of Balta Acher. That's number one, when I'm supposed to give the money. There's a second issue which has to do with the fiscal year. And that is, you know, in the world of taxes, so we have, okay, now we just finished 2015. So in 2015, I made a lot of money in one stock. I lost a lot of money in real estate. So how do I pay taxes? So I deduct the losses from the profits and whatever manner the law allows them to be deducted. And then I have a net. And then I take the net. And from the net is the taxable obligation. But you, most things, you can't take, say, well, I had a loss in 2016, I want to take it off in 2015, or vice versa. I mean, there are certain times that they let you carry it over, but most of the time you can't. And the halachas of Maisik Kesofim also have the same thing, that you need a fiscal year. So let's say our guy is doing the fiscal year from May 1st to May 1st. So all the profits and losses in May 1st all get together to form the balance sheet. What happens after May 1st? So on May 2nd, they lost $100,000. That's the next year's cheshbon. So just as we have in the Meiser of Trumas and Meiseris, that you can't take Meiser from one year on the next, each year is its own entity. So in Meiser Kesofim, each year is also its own entity. So we have to establish the fiscal year. So within that fiscal year, we have a cheshbon. And that determines what the din of the Meiser is. Now, there are all different levels. I mean, we should not ignore the fact that the Shulchan Aruch also talked about a very high level of stock of giving a chaymash nechassim. You know, and there are those that are mekayim it. I remember many years back in Johannesburg, I met a man, I believe he's living in London today, and he was an architect. He was not, you know, he wasn't poor, but he wasn't super rich either. And he said his Rebbe prevailed upon him to give chaymash. He says it was like the most important thing he did in his life. And he says his whole life changed because of it. I still remember it's well, 40 years ago that I was there and I heard this from him. But it's a different, you know, so we can't ignore the fact that there are higher levels of stock. I mean, if I wind up in a position that I can give more, I shouldn't feel there's no purpose in giving more. Now, I'll tell you a very interesting thing that happened. It's not relevant to most of us, but it's a perspective. A fellow I know whose income is in the seven figures a year, I mean, probably well into the seven figures a year, and he was giving chaymash for his tzedaka. So he asked me a shiloh, he says, my tzedaka operations are tight, should I be moisef past the chaymash? It was a very good question, but not a question I was not used to playing in this league. You know, it was out of my league. So I sent the shiloh to Rabbi Yoshev. Was that so? And he gave me a very interesting answer. He says, if the person really has a time in giving tzedakah, he says, you can push him further. So I did, and the person today gives probably between 30-35% of his income to tzedakah. It's an enormous amount of money every year, enormous. But it's a person that's margish, the brocha that's involved in the union of tzedakah. Now, it's a very interesting thing. There's a chazal. The Gemara tells us that a person should not give more than chaymash nechosim for tzedakah. So there's a very interesting story. There was a Bal Musa. 20%, yeah. It was chomish, 20%.
Is that the word chomisha?
No. Yeah, it's the same, but chomish is a fifth.
Oh, it's a fifth.
So there was a famous, he was a big guy, and a big Malmus, so his name was Alexander Moshe Lapidus. And he lived in the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century. So he wrote in his Tzavo that I was Mekayim every dictate of Chazal, without exception. Except one. One dictate of Chazal I willfully violated. And Chazal say that you should not give more than chomer, chomer, a fifth of your nechosim for of your money for tzedakah. He said that I willfully violated it. He said that when they'll call, hold me in before the Bez and Shalmayel, I'll defend myself. That Chofetz Chaim and Avos Chesed does give numerous reasons that a person is allowed to go past chomish. I mean, one is if a person is very wealthy, the reason of chomish, this didn't apply to Alexander Moshe Lapidus. That didn't work for him. You know, if a person is very wealthy, the reason a person shouldn't give more than chomish is that he should not financially destroy himself and become himself a problem, and he can't support himself. So a person that has unusual wealth, so he doesn't need a large portion of his wealth to live on. He doesn't even know what to do with the money that he has. So if you're some male, he's allowed to give it away in big fistfuls, even if it's more than a chaymish. You know, if Bill Gates gave away 50% of his income, he still wouldn't know what to do with his money.
Yeah, 90%.
I mean, he is, listen, you have to give this credit. I mean, he and Warren Buffett have dedicated their vast fortunes to help the world.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, $70 billion they put together, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so they understand themselves. There's no personal thing they could do with this money. You know, even if they want to take care of the family, it's just totally out of that realm. There's no shaykhis anymore. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the haterim that they're on. If there's a very, very pressing need of pikuach nefesh, I think, or pidyon shvuyim, those type of needs, that one is allowed to give more than chayim shvu. Those are some of the haterim. The Chofetz Chaim discusses a number of different haterim in Avos Chesed. So this was Rav Alexander Moshe Lapidus. He says, I willfully violated it. When they'll call me to task before the Bez and Shamayel, I'll defend myself.
It should be our biggest
avera. It should be our biggest avera. There's a maisa with Rav Menachem Mendel of Shklov. Rav Menachem Mendel of Shklov was a Talmud of the Gro. And one group of the Gro's Talmudim that made Aliyah from Europe, from Lithuania to Eretz Yisrael, was led by Rav Menachem Mendel of Shklov. Rav Menachem Mendel of Shklov was on the sail with his group of Talmidim and Gro, and they were sailing from Europe to Eretz Yisrael. And they hit a fierce storm, and they were afraid the ship was going to sink. So they gathered together, and they decided they have to be mizvada lechaton, and maybe their tshuva will be matzalim. So one young man of these Talmidim gets up, and he says, I lied day in, day out to my parents for 2-3 years. Every single day I lied to them. I lied to their face. So what happened? What did you do? He says, I was the oldest, and I had 3 or 4 younger siblings. And we had, there was no food in my house. Zero. Almost zero. They're tiny, tiny. So I was concerned for my younger brothers and sisters. So I told my mother that she doesn't have to give me a portion of food because I get breakfast in cheder. And that was a lie. Cheder didn't give breakfast. I went hungry every morning, but at least I took care of her. So Rabbi Menachem Mendel of Shklov stopped when he heard this, and he started to be mispalo for the Rebbeinu. He says, in the Slichus we say, Peneino elatlois va'alechatois. Rebbeinu, look at all the travail we experience in life, and look away from the sins. So Menachem Mendel of Shklov said, Rebbeinu Shalom, I want you to look at the sins of Klal Yisrael. This is his sin, that he lied to his mother that for 2-3 years straight, every single day, that he should take care of his younger siblings, that he should have some food to eat. Now, the how one gives out money. Want to talk about how one gives out money and for what purposes it's given out. Now, what's clear, we'll see, we'll come back to in the Shach, that at least 50% of the money that we have for Meiser should be used for Torah purposes. You know, especially if we're makabel upon ourselves only, mitzadon hoga toiva, so we can have latitude to use the other half for other mitzvahs. That's true. But nevertheless, we have to have a cheshbon of what we do. And the question is, what to give money to? Whom to give money to? And how to give money? So there are two things. It's in general, a person has to look very, very carefully before he gives anything. Significant money. Well, small bits of money here and there, mamela. But before you give significantly, look very, very carefully. It still rings in my ears. I sat across the table from Rabbi Yosef Zatzal, and I asked him the following question. I asked him, do I have to give money to every poor person that comes to me? So I will never forget his answer. He looks at me. And he says, I don't understand you. He says, do you mean to tell me that in America they don't give welfare? He says, even here they give welfare. He said, if you want to be yoytze mitzvah stalker, then you have to give your money to a gabbai stalker that knows the people to whom he's giving the money. He says, otherwise you're not going to succeed in giving it stalker. So a person has to have cheshbon. So part of that cheshbon could be, listen, if you're going to give to Achzokas HaTorah, so be sure that it's Achzokas HaTorah. It's not a store. You know, when you know clearly what you're giving to, yeah, there's a yeshiva, there are 300 guys learning there, yeah, so you're supporting Torah.
So every morning there in Hillcrest there are 4 or 5 Williamsburg guys come their hands up. Am I supposed to ignore them? I really don't know, but I suspect.
I presume some of them are the same ones that come here. Some of them I know to be poor people.
Okay.
There was one of them that I know, there used to be two. One guy has disappeared. I don't know, I have to find out what happened to him. He hasn't been around at all. But one guy I know, he's been kind of distantly related to my mother-in-law. He's not collecting for himself. He owns a business. Yes, Parnosa, without problem. He goes around to raise money for tzedakas. That's what he's going around for. He's not a needy person. Yeah, some of the people are needy people. I know one of the guys that comes and he's needy. He's a poor person. I know, forget it. But this is a minor thing, is Mamela. But if you're going to give a major in the Sina, whatever for you is a major in the Sina, do your homework before you give it. Don't be in a rush. Otherwise, listen, it's as old as history. The Gemara in Baba Basra says that Yirmiyo or Yeshayo, I don't remember, gave a klola, I think Yirmiyo, to his Seidim. So what was the klola that he gave them? What klola could a Novi give to a Jew? What klola could a Novi give to a Jew? So again, this klola was the following, that when they give tzedakah, they should give it to people that are unworthy of it. And they shouldn't have the schus of tzedakah. That's the klola that I can give. That's it. That's what it maxed out. But we do have to be, this is as old as history. And nothing changed. It's amazing. We think that, we live in it now. There's the age of travel in the world. And therefore, all types of things go on. Nothing changed at all. There was a goyim in the 17th century. His name was a Shmuel Kadenova. He wrote it to Tiferes Shmuel. He's the Mechaber of the Nachlas Shiva. In the back of the Sefer Nachlas Shiva, which is the classic work on all types of documents that have to be made halachically, in the back of Nachlas Shiva, there are 85 tshuvas from a Shmuel Kadenova. And one of them was written somewhere approximately 1660 about. I mean, 1660. Now listen to this story. this story, if I told you the story, I didn't tell you it was a Shmuel Cave Nova, you would say, yeah, this is like a 1990s, 2000 story. There was a guy, and he was supporting an institution in Eretz Yisrael. Well, there were Mishalochim that came in those days too, used to travel. So, one day a guy comes to him and tells him, asks him, he says, I can't help you too much, I'm supporting this other institution. So the guy tells him, that institution? He says, you're wasting your time, it's no good, and whatever, the whole story. And I'm representing the real deal. So he gets convinced by the second guy, and he starts giving money to the second guy's mason instead of the first guy's mason. So then a few years went by, and he comes to Rosh Shmuel Cave Nova, and he wants to know if he has to stick to this promise that he made him or not. The second institution. So that's Ad Kan, is in terms of a story that happened in the 20th century, 21st century story, but happened actually in the 17th century. And then the tshuva that Rosh Shmuel Cave Nova gives is an amazing tshuva. So this was shortly after the Gzeiras Tachvatat. And then you had the rise of the Shabtzai Tzvi, came shortly after that, so circa 1660. So Rosh Shmuel Cave Nova writes the following, that what was the mindset of the Jew of Europe at this era? He said, all of us expected that that Mashiach's here. And we're sooner in a few years, we're going to pack up, and we're going to go to Eretz Yisrael, and that's it, we're out of here. So that was the mindset. So he says, Mamela, this Gvir, when he promised to support this institution, figured in 2-3 years he'll be living in Eretz Yisrael himself, so we'll see firsthand what the deal is. And then he'll make his final decision. So all he meant, he said, was to make a commitment for a few years until he's going to get to Eretz Yisrael, and he'll look at it firsthand and see what the deal is. So Mamela says, I'm b'chuyiv more than that, because that's all he ever intended to obligate himself to. It's the mindset, but the story is a story which goes across the ages. The world hasn't changed, and the world won't change, you know. It's the 17th century, the 18th century, the 21st century, it's all the same. No differences. Now, one more thing I want to add. Because there's a Rambam that's rather well known. The Rambam writes, the Mishnah says in Ovis, HaKoldafi Roiv HaMaisa, according to the abundance of good actions that we take, that's how we're judged. So the Rambam says a very well known thing. The Rambam says, if 10 poor people come to me, so I can give one guy $10, or I can give $1 to 10. I should give $1 to 10. Because lefi roiv ha-maisa, because each time I have to do an act of giving stock, that's something, it's a maisa of its own right. So the shaila is the following. Is this an absolute statement? That I should divide my stock into as many small pieces as possible, or not? So I learned a Yiddish of mine was a grandson of Rabbi Yoshev, what his Rabbi Yoshev held about this. Said the following. This is assuming that I'm going to help each person a little bit. So if I'm going to help each person a little bit, I'm better spreading it around than giving it all to one person. But suppose that if I concentrate my giving, I can get a guy back on his feet. Right? He's in a tough bind, but if I give him a strong, a heavy amount of money, which I have in my hand, he'll get back on his feet. But if I spread it around, I divide it in 10 parts, it's not going to help. So then that's more significant, he said, than dividing it 10 ways. I should give it to him to put him back on his feet. You know, people, tztoko, the sensitivity for tztoko, to see the needs of tztoko. I was used to, many years back, you know, my Shrezel Azangazund lived in the United States. So before Sukkot, we used to meet and go to buy new love him in a servant. And I'd go with him. So I used to meet him in Williamsburg. We went usually to Manhattan, to the Astrid Center on Canal Street, and whatever. And we spent a lot of time there until we had what we wanted. And then we'd come back across the bridge for the bus. And I would part ways with him. He went off to his house in Williamsburg, and I took the bus to Queens. So I'm sitting on the bus once, it's, I don't know, before Yom Kippur or around Yom Kippur time when you're going for a little longer than necessary. It's late at night, and there's not too many people there. And there's a Yid sitting on the bus. It wasn't a Frum Yid, it was a conservative Jew, a member of the conservative Jewish center of Kew Gardens. The one across the street, you know, from the reservation. So he says to me, he says, do you know Mr. William Sakenik? Moshe Sakenik's father. Yeah, I knew him. He was one of my neighbors. He lived like a quarter of a block from me. I knew who he was. She says, he's a truly religious man. He says, what prompted him to tell me? He says, I have to tell you. He says, years back, circa 1950, I think this was in the circa 1980 when he told it to me, and I think it had happened about 30 years or so before. I was in business, I think in the textile business, and I used to buy from Mr. Sakenik. So then one day he walks into my place and he says, you haven't bought from me in a few months. I suspect that you're financially in a tough bind. That's my suspicion. Your business doesn't seem to be going well. I know the flow of your business. So we told him, yeah, you're absolutely right. My business is in tough times. So Mr. Sakenik said, listen, I didn't ask him for anything. He said, here's $5,000. $5,000 in those years, you could buy a house for $5,000. People in those years, yeah, bought houses for $5,000. He says, here's $5,000, and get yourself back together. When you're back together, you'll pay me back. He says, I didn't ask him for anything. He said, time went by, I got back on my feet, I paid him back. He says, but that's a truly religious man. He sensed the need, and he was there, and he reached out strongly to me to help me out. So that, Rabbi Yosha, as it's all said, that takes precedence over a chol lefi reva maisa. So we'll hold it at this point, Rabbi Yosha.